Hello, and welcome back to our Onc Live Onc Chat series on regional therapies. I'm Dr. Gregory Tisi, Chief of Surgical Oncology for the Southern Region at the Hackensack Meridian Health System in New Jersey, Assistant Professor at the School of Medicine. Today, we're shifting from liver-directed therapy to a regional therapy designed for one of the most challenging cancers we treat, pancreatic ductal adenocarcinoma. Our focus today is transarterial microperfusion, or TAMP. This is an emerging method for delivering highly concentrated chemotherapy directly to the tumor-bearing region of the pancreas. We're again joined by our colleagues, Dr. Eric Pletcher, a surgical oncologist and assistant professor of medicine at the School of Medicine. Thank you for joining us, Eric. And Dr. Anthony Scholler, who you'll also remember from our PIPAC and HAI episodes as well. Dr. Scholler is a surgical oncologist and the medical director of quality for our Department of Surgery. They'll be moderating today's session. So Anthony, Eric, take it away.
Thanks, Greg. So in our last episode, we talked about hepatic arterial infusion and how regional therapy can dramatically increase local drug concentration while reducing systemic toxicity. Today, we're applying the same philosophy but to a very different organ, the pancreas, where systemic therapy often struggles to penetrate the tumor. Eric, you want to frame the problem for us?
Sure thing. So, unfortunately, pancreatic cancer is notorious for not just being hypovascular, but also having a desmoplastic reaction in the gland and being fibrotic. And this can make it resistant to systemic therapies. Even when patients have localized disease, there can be vascular involvement, which makes them upfront unresectable. And as Greg stated in the upcoming case series, these options can quickly become exhausted and the tumor might remain localized yet unresectable. So Greg, maybe we can start off by addressing why you have so much interest in regional therapy for pancreatic cancer and also why now?
Well, the short answer really is that, as you both know, systemic therapy sort of has a ceiling. Even our best regimens, FOLFIRINOX, GEM, nab-paclitaxel, and even the newest regimen, PAX-G, they often fail to achieve therapeutic intratumoral concentrations because of the tumor biology and mechanical factors. TAMP tries to solve this by isolating our arterial segment and driving chemotherapy across the vessel wall into the tumor microenvironment. Essentially, it bathes the tumor in chemotherapy, and this results in higher localized drug concentrations while ideally sparing the rest of the body from high exposure. And so far, and we'll talk about this, but the early clinical experience suggests it's feasible, safe, and may meaningfully improve local control.
All right, so let's hone in on some of these nitty-gritty details and talk about what exactly TAMP is and how the double balloon catheter actually works.
So TAMP uses this catheter, which you mentioned is a double balloon catheter. It's called the Renovo cath. Basically, the balloons are adjustable, so it's advanced like a normal endovascular procedure to an artery that's feeding the region of the pancreas where the tumor is sitting. The balloons are inflated on either side, and once this is isolated segment of vessel is successful, then you infuse a drug. In these patients, it's typically gemcitabine. Because there's no forward flow, the drug is basically forced across the vessel wall. You don't actually even need to have a, quote, feeder vessel, because once again, it goes across the vessel wall, which is fundamentally different from a simple intra-arterial infusion, which historically has really failed because most of the drug is really washed out of the tumor.
So it's really a pressure-mediated transvascular delivery system?
Yeah, basically. Preclinical work shows that it recruits the vasovasorum and increases tissue penetration, and that mechanism makes it quite unique.
Okay, great. Let's talk about who you're actually treating with this technology and what the ideal TAMP candidate looks like.
So right now, where we have the most evidence and where it's being used with the greatest frequency is in patients of locally advanced pancreatic cancer. And these patients should have no evidence of distant metastasis. They generally need to have exhausted or cannot tolerate further systemic therapy. They should still have localized but unresectable disease, either due to major vascular involvement or if they just don't want surgery or they're just not good candidates for surgery.
Can you tell us a little bit about who you wouldn't do this procedure on?
So in terms of absolute contraindications, from a safety perspective, we would say that patients with SMV, portal vein thrombosis, probably represent the highest risk. And this is particularly when you are using the SMA as your conduit for TAMP. So because you have to briefly occlude the vessel, there is a risk for bowel ischemia. In some of the early studies, these were the patients that had the most abdominal pain, although, you know, there hasn't really been patients who've had significant bowel ischemia as far as I'm aware. Is this an absolute contraindication? There's nuance there. So if a patient has a longstanding thrombosis and has developed substantial collaterals that you could see, theoretically, you could consider it. However, there are technical ways you could mitigate this as well. You can put the balloons down in the middle of the treatment. So kind of give some of the treatment, drop the balloons, reinflate them. I certainly wouldn't do this early on in your experience, but it is possible. Certainly, the risk is greater and has to be treated with utmost respect if you're going to do that.
So why don't you walk us through the procedure like we did for the hepatic artery infusion pumps and just go step by step?
Sure. So like any of these diseases, we need good pre-procedural imaging. CT and MRI are great. Most specifically, though, you truly need a triple phase scan because you need to see the arterial anatomy to make sure they don't have a bare anatomy or there's a good place to land your catheter that's nearby. And once again, you want to look for venous thrombosis or any other reason not to do the procedure. The other reason for doing good scans is to make sure they don't have metastatic disease that you may have missed. In terms of catheter placement, this is an endovascular procedure. It's done as similarly to other endovascular procedures. It's done under fluoroscopy. And it's typically placed either in the SMA, the hepatic artery, or splenic artery, depending on the tumor location. The balloons are inflated to exclude any side branches. So you want to prevent washout and you want to prevent the drug going somewhere else that you don't intend. Once you've confirm that the balloons are in a good position and, you know, more fluoroscopy is done. And then ultimately chemo infusion is performed. And as I mentioned, at this point, gemcitabine is the agent of choice. It's typically done over several minutes. And then the balloons are dropped down and a post-procedure angiography is performed and the patient goes home the same day.
So from a treatment regimen perspective, I have a few questions. How often is this done? How many times can you undergo TAMP? And are patients receiving any other treatments concurrently?
So the procedure is done once every 2 weeks. So it is a little bit labor intensive. However, what I would say is that it's the only treatment they're typically receiving at that time. So patients are not undergoing systemic therapy generally. So they come in, they get their procedure, and then they go home. And then for 2 weeks, they're not undergoing any other treatments. And so their pre-procedural quality of life is generally preserved quite well. You can do about 8 to 10 treatments on this biweekly basis, and that's about 3 to 5 months of treatment. Once you get towards that about 8 to 10 number, we do worry a little bit about endothelial damage, and it's sort of recommended that you kind of go monthly. We're checking CA19-9 levels throughout the treatment and reimaging as per protocol, but patients tend to do quite well.
So Greg, you hinted at a lot of the technical aspect of the procedure. Could you kind of walk us through some of the safety issues related to it and what are the main risks?
So other than the contraindications that we talked about, the good news is that it has very low systemic toxicity because the plasma gemcitabine exposure is dramatically reduced when you get catheter-based treatments. The main risks are more local, arterial spasms, thrombosis, catheter-related issues, any endovascular procedure. There's a rare chance of non-target perfusion. Certainly, if that went very awry, that would be significant. It's with people who are very technically adept at doing endovascular procedures, this really shouldn't happen, although obviously it is a risk with any technical procedure. In terms of the dosing, we found the maximum dose of gemcitabine, which is the same as the systemic dose, was safe without really serious complications. These were very uncommon.
Since this is a relatively new treatment, let's discuss some of the data that we have for this treatment.
So I like to think in sort of four buckets. The first would be sort of the early feasibility safety studies. The second would be this combined analysis. When you read about it, you'll often see it described as the RR1, RR2 combined analysis. There's the pharmacokinetic data, and then there's the Tiger Pack trial. So the early studies were this RR1, which is a phase 1-2 dose escalation trial, 20 patients with locally advanced pancreas cancer. It was found that the TAMP was technically feasible in nearly all the patients. We got the maximum dose, as I mentioned, which is the 1,000 milligrams per meter squared. Toxicity was minimal, far less than what we would see with systemic gemcitabine. Because of this, the follow-up study, which was the RR2, is a 25-patient, multi-center registry study. It proved that repeat TAMPs were safe, no real unexpected vascular complications, and showed some encouraging biochemical radiographic responses. So then they ultimately combined these studies into this RR1, RR2 combined analysis, which basically was the 45 patients, and they looked at survival. So the median overall survival from diagnosis was still relatively low, it was 12.6 months. However, stratification was very important. So when they looked at prior therapy, so the patients who had no prior therapy did poorly, they who just got TAMP lived about 7 months. Now, these are people who had no prior therapy at all. So if they're not willing or able to tolerate any treatment, their survivability is going to be poor. Interestingly, the biggest difference was in patients who had chemo radiation versus just chemotherapy.
So yeah, in this study, you know, it points out a 60% two-year survival with chemo radiation in the subgroup analysis. And this is way beyond the historical benchmarks for locally advanced pancreas cancer.
That's my understanding as well. So historically unresectable locally advanced pancreatic cancer has a two-year survival around 10 to 20%. Greg, do you mind highlighting why you think the radiation is contributing to such an improved outcome for these patients?
Yeah, I think this was a surprising finding for the investigators, to be honest. Pancreas tumors are notoriously hypovascular. They're embedded in dense desmoplastic stroma, which can limit systemic administered medication to penetrate. Radiation does change that microenvironment. It induces endothelial injury, stromal remodeling, and basically microvascular pruning, right? So taking out the really small blood vessels. And the idea here is, and you know, this is what has been looked at subsequent to finding this out, was it reduces arterial washout.
And I think that's really reflected in the clinical data that you just mentioned. In that combined RR1, RR2 analysis with the patients who underwent chemo radiation, they were living significantly longer lives by comparison. This also kind of suggests that radiation primes the tumor bed for regional therapy.
Now, do we have any pharmacokinetic data to really understand what's going on under the hood, so to speak?
We do, actually. The pharmacokinetic data comes from a sub-study from Tiger Pack. So briefly, what it showed was that the plasma gemcitabine exposure was dramatically lower with TAMP compared to IV infusions. Local concentrations were significantly higher within tumors when given via TAMP. You know, this is sort of the holy grail of regional therapy, maximizing local cytotoxicity and minimizing systemic toxicity. So this was obviously a big win.
Greg, do you mind taking us through some of the specifics of the Tiger Pack trial that's currently ongoing?
Yeah, so this was where really clinical interest started to substantially increase, I would argue. So all the patients were started with induction systemic therapy, and they chose the gem-nab-paclitaxel regimen. All the patients received pre-TAMP radiation, and then they restaged them. And if they did not develop a progression of disease, metastatic disease, et cetera, the patients were then randomized to one of two arms. So one arm was to continue systemic therapy, so stay on the gemabraxane, and the other was to switch to TAMP-delivered gemcitabine for up to 8 infusions. And so the survival data for this study was measured from the time of randomization. So it's typically about 4 or 5 months after induction therapy. So what the trial was really asking is, after induction therapy and radiation, is it better to continue systemic or to go to TAMP?
That's exactly the clinical question that we all face in our own practices. Once you've controlled the disease locally and systemically, what's the best consolidation strategy? More systemic therapy, which patients generally don't tolerate that well, or move to a regional approach that targets the primary tumor with far less toxicity?
Were the interim results from the TIGeR-PaC trial positive, Greg?
They were. There was a pre-planned interim analysis of about 45 patients. And after randomization, the TAMP group had a median of overall survival of about 16 months. So we're looking at around the 20-month period, right? Versus about 10 months in the control arm. And also, importantly, they highlight that there was a greater than 65% reduction in serious adverse events. So the toxicity reduction was quite substantial and offered patients the ability to continue treatment with minimal systemic burden.
Now, before we move on, I'd like to point something out that I think every pancreas cancer clinician knows too well is the RECIST response rates, you know, with locally advanced pancreas cancer. They're abysmal. Even with their best modern systemic therapy, we rarely see dramatic radiographic shrinkage afterwards.
Yeah, I agree. And whether or not the patient receives FOLFIRINOX or gemcitabine-based chemotherapy, you might see a biochemical improvement, but we're still not seeing a true RECIST partial response being very common. And even when we add chemoradiation, the radiographic response is still only modest. These tumors often look almost unchanged on CT, even when biologically it is responding.
Yeah, and I think that's where TAMP becomes potentially even more interesting, because you're not relying on systemic penetration through hypovasco-desmoplastic tissue. It's going right into the tumor-bearing region under pressure. So mechanistically, it gives you a chance to achieve a true local cytotoxic effect that might be more substantial than what systemic therapy alone can accomplish. And, you know, we're starting to see hints of that in several of our patients who have had really meaningful radiographic responses, improvements with resolution of major mesenteric vein narrowing or even patency of major mesenteric vessels that were completely occluded, regression of major arterial involvement like the SMA. I mean, these are changes that we rarely would see with systemic therapy alone.
So I think an important question here is, could we use TAMP to actually increase the pool of patients who are becoming resectable eventually?
Well, that's the hope. I would say we have to be cautious. The data are very early, and we don't know how many patients would truly be converted to surgery. To date, there have been very few patients that have. So at the very least, TAMP may offer better local control, which I would argue is useful in this disease where the primary tumor does drive a lot of morbidity if it can't be removed.
But even if conversion to resection ends up being rare, improving the local response and delaying progression is still a win. These patients often suffer from pain, biliary obstruction, gastric outlet obstruction, all driven by the primary tumor and the inability to control its growth. A therapy that can be meaningfully shrink or stabilize a mass such as TAMP, I think, is critical at this point.
Yeah, I agree as well. And I guess while we're not ready to say TAMP is used as a conversion therapy, I think it's more than fair to say that it offers a new opportunity for local response in a disease where RECIST shrinkage has historically been almost non-existent.
Yeah, and that's why the ongoing trials like TIGeR-PaC are so important. They'll tell us whether these early signals actually translate into consistent, clinically meaningful improvements in local control and potentially resectability.
So what else is on the horizon?
I think there's a lot of opportunity for research and novel utilization. Personally, I'd like to see it be evaluated in patients with borderline or even resectable disease. And, you know, we can include with combinatory regimens. So maybe patients actually could get systemic therapy at the same time and that they're getting TAMP, especially considering that the systemic dose of gemcitabine, if it's given via TAMP, is quite low. So it is possible with creative regimens that you could combine them. Maybe we could give alternative agents through the catheter or test drugs that maybe would not have worked historically. Maybe the reason they haven't been working has nothing to do with the biology of the tumor, but it has to do with its resistance to the therapy, meeting a critical dose level within the tumor. It would also be nice if we could see some biomarker-driven patient selection, so things like ctDNA testing to see who might really benefit from this. And then obviously, most importantly, we want the full TIGeR-PaC trial results. They did have their second pre-planned interim analysis, which we don't have the data. However, the study was allowed to continue by the external reviewers, which would certainly suggest that their first pre-planned interim findings have been maintained, and then there is a reason to continue this trial.
One of the biggest frontiers, figuring out which patients benefit the most and how to integrate TAMP with to the multimodality treatment strategy rather than just using it as a last resort for these patients. In closing, to summarize, TAMP is an emerging regional therapy with a strong physiological rationale that's encouraging early clinical data, and there's a growing role for carefully selected patients with locally advanced pancreas cancer.
Yeah, I agree. TAMP appears to be safe, repeatable, and might offer some type of meaningful local control when systemic options are really exhausted. Most importantly, much like all local therapies we've discussed in this three-part series, it brings hope for improved outcomes in this aggressive condition and provides patients with the opportunity to keep on fighting.
Couldn't agree more. Well, thank you to all our listeners for staying with us through this series on innovation in local therapy for advanced solid malignancies. A sincere thanks to my colleagues, Drs. Scholler and Pletcher, Dr. Golis, who was in our previous episodes, for all their contributions and time. And thank you all for listening.